Welcome to Horsepower Hour, episode number 4, and I'm Klain Duschak, host of The Dirt Show. My co-host on the Horsepower Hour is Ben Bainey, owner of Sorensen's Appliance Repair, who is also an asphalt late model driver, now a vintage car driver, and a snowmobile racer. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks, Klain. Good to be here.
Our first guest tonight is Brian Warhol with the GSTA Rod and Custom Show. Brian, let's go back to why the Gopher State Timing Association was formed in 1954 in the first place. For over 60 years, the GSTA has given its members a strong, unified voice on important issues like getting a safe place to drag race in Minnesota, because prior to the evolution of GSTA, it was strictly street racing between World War II and the late 50s.
That's exactly right. You know, hot rodding had been in the Twin Cities, like you say. It started in the mid to late 40s and into the 50s. And there was a lot of circle tracks around town, but there really wasn't anything for drag racing. So yeah, they drove their modified cars on the streets and drag raced on the streets.
Who decided to get together? Who were the founding members of the Gopher State Timing Association?
Well, it actually started with the Minneapolis Police Department. Captain Clifford Bailey of the North Side Precinct got together a group of these clubs. You know, they're back in the 50s. There were literally hundreds of car clubs in the Twin Cities area and, you know, all throughout the state. And they wanted to get that group of people together to talk about what can we do to keep things safe and maybe try to get some of this racing off the street. So things kind of turned, you know, they were holding it in a police station, the meetings, and it started out that it was mainly to talk about not street racing anymore and to get these clubs and organizations to start doing sanctioned things. They did a lot of back in the days that was reliability runs was big, you know, just doing cruises. Like, cruising has come back around again now during the pandemic when there was a lack of car shows around. The cruising became popular again. There was also a lot of ice racing back in those days. Lake Phelan over in St. Paul was a big, big place to do ice racing. And that's actually where the timing came from, was that Gopher State Timing Association would time those races. So that's how this whole timing association came about. Then in 1957, the Twin Cities Optimist Club decided that maybe it's time that we get a sanctioned drag strip in the Twin Cities area. So, of course, GSTA was a big, big driving force behind getting Minnesota dragways going.
That's a great piece of history to start out with. Hey, Brian, when and how did the idea of an organizing an award-winning car show come about?
Well, we had our first car show in a Red Owl parking lot on Lake Street in September of 1956, and it took off. And that was, you know, one of the first car shows in town, actually, at that point. And what they did was then they took a year off, didn't have a show in 57, and the next show then was in the spring of 58. And that was held at the Minneapolis Armory, National Guard Armory in downtown Minneapolis. And, I mean, that was just a money-making program to be able to afford to do all the things they wanted to do as far as, you know, helping get the drag strip going, helping to do other things. They worked a lot with the Twin Cities Optimist Club, working with their youth. And that's how it all started, and the need for a car show.
For a crown jewel car show to survive from 1958 to present day takes a great organization and a great group of members and volunteers.
Well, that's for sure. This year, I'm celebrating my 50th anniversary with the club. So I've been out of this year we'll be hosting our 64th annual show. So this will be my 50th show that I've been involved with. Got involved when I was a teenager. 15 years old, I didn't even have a car yet, but I'd hang around the local speed shop in town and became a member. Then when I was 16 years old, I got a job out at Minnesota Dragways, worked out there for a couple of years, so I stayed close to cars that way. And then I really started to focus on working within GSTA. You know, we've owned race cars since 1963. We've had 9 different dragsters over that period of time, and I got involved with the dragster program, and now we've got a nostalgia front engine dragster that's got a alcohol-powered, you know, methanol alcohol, small block Chevy that'll do 162 miles an hour in 8 seconds in the quarter mile. We also have a 1976 Chevrolet Nova race car that's like a bracket car, runs 12 seconds. And these race cars that we have, any member of the organization, I should probably step back. GSTA right now has 17 different car clubs that are members of the organization. We're an organization of clubs, not individuals. So where, you know, a group like MSRA, Minnesota Street Ride Association, that's made up of individual members. But Gopher State Timing Association is made up of clubs. So you're a member of a club. So any member of GSTA that wants to come out and work on any of those race cars has the opportunity to drive those. Now, the dragster, not everybody wants to get involved driving a dragster. So there's a pretty core group of 6, 8, 10 people that handle that. But that Nova, we've had people, 2019, we had 27 different people drive the car from 16 years old to 72 years old. And some of those people, it was the first time that they ever went down the drag strip, and we provided them with the vehicle to do that.
That's perfect. Get them hooked in and, let them have some fun.
Exactly. So that's why we do the car show now, is we have to fund our racing program, as well as part of the show proceeds every year do go to charity. We give money to the Courage Kenny Institute. They used to have a Cars for Courage program, you know, where they took donated cars and would refurbish and give some away or sell them as fundraisers for Courage Kenny. They no longer have their program, but we've decided to still continue on with Courage Kenny Institute. And this is like our 26th year of giving part of the show proceeds to them. We're also big into drag racing, and we've got Midwest Drag Racers Association, MDRA. They have a junior dragster program, which is, if you're not familiar with that, it's a half-scale dragster, rear-engine dragster based on a 5-horsepower Briggs & Stratton engine that kids from 5 years old to 16, 17 years old compete in. So we sponsor their junior dragster program. And then we also have a junior dragster that we take around to shows for kids to sit in. It doesn't run. It's not an active race car. It's a showpiece. But in the, I believe, 9 years that we've had that, we've put over 5,000 kids have sat in that car.
Incredible. So, Brian, the 64th annual GSTA Rod and Custom Show is April 2nd and 3rd at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. What can spectators expect to see this year?
It's in the Coliseum, so you don't have to worry when you say Minnesota State Fairgrounds. It's not outdoors on April 2nd and 3rd. It's indoors in the Coliseum, okay, or the building that used to be referred to as the Hippodrome. This should actually be our 66th show, but we got shut down 2 years because of COVID. So the third time's a charm. We haven't had a show for 2 years. So we're really excited to hopefully be able to have it, knock on wood, that we're able to have it this year, that nothing serious happens and we get shut down again. We always offer over 100 of the area's finest hot rods, customs, street machines, motorcycles. A lot of people will save a new build and debut it at our show. This year we've got some cars that, you know, were entered 2 years ago that we couldn't have the show. So they're getting some priority to be able to show this year because they weren't able to 2 years ago when they had entered. But we've heard of some really, really nice new stuff that's been built that's going to show up at the show. We also, this year, are having Memories of Minnesota Dragways is kind of the theme. We're going to have some old nostalgia drag cars that competed at Minnesota Dragways on display. I can't totally say who they are yet because we're still working out some details on a couple of them. But people should follow our Facebook page or our website. We'll always release information on there. Our Facebook page is a very active Facebook page. We have a lot of followers, and we post new stuff 3 to 4 times a week. About three times a week we post news things on our Facebook page.
Perfect.
So you can follow us at Gopher State Timing Association on Facebook, or our website is gstarod-custom.com.
Perfect.
Spectators are also going to get to see some top-notch vendors. Extreme Powder Coating, the Blooming Prairie, being one of those longtime vendors. What I hear from the vendors is hot rodders and customizers at the show are serious about the sport of customizing hot rods and restoration and are really looking for those top-notch quality products.
Well, exactly. And that's one thing about our show compared to some of the others is we really have hardcore people that are really into the hot rodding hobby. And I mean, a lot of our vendors say that they do, very well at our show because we don't have an overabundance of them. We don't have a lot of duplication. So if you use an example, Extreme Powder Coating, they would be the only powder coater there. We don't double up and triple up a lot of the different types of vendors. And there'll be people selling cars and artwork and, things like that. Plus, it's always a good weekend to grab some state fair food.
Absolutely. So speaking of Facebook, the Gopher State Timing Association has a great Facebook site to follow the club activities. Can anyone get involved with the GSTA?
No, they have to be a member of one of the member car clubs. So if anybody wants to reach out to join, you can let us know the area you're in, and we can see if there's a club that's in that area that's looking for members.
Good to know.
Are the show vehicles invitation only, or can anyone apply to get their vehicle in the show?
Anyone can apply, and the deadline for this year's show to submit an entry is March 1st. Anyone can apply. We do go through a selection process where the cars are selected. So we always say, the better pictures you provide, the better chance you have of getting in. And this year we've added, one of our sponsors is the Veit Automotive Foundation Museum in Buffalo. And they've added a Young Builders Award, which is for anybody 27 or younger at the time of submission of their car entry is going to be eligible for the Young Builders Award, which has a special 3-foot trophy and $500 prize money to the Young Builder of the Year.
Brian, speaking of vendors, do you still have room for more vendors at this time?
That I don't know. You can always reach out to us and I would put you in touch with our vendor coordinator. We can't have people come in that sell any type of food or beverages. So
sure.
We have a lot of people that, say, hey, I sell beef jerky or I sell peanuts. Can't do that because the state fair controls all the food. So we can't have anybody that comes in as a vendor of anything like that.
Every year you have something special everyone wants to see, whether it's firing up a 1,000-horsepower dragster or showcasing a custom build. What's a must-see at this year's 2022 show?
Well, we are going to continue our history of doing the Cackle car startup. This year we have a car coming up from Des Moines, Iowa, called the Rebel. It's a 1965 Plymouth, and what they called an AFX car. FX meant factory experimental. This would be what an early funny car was. It's an altered wheelbase car, and that car runs on nitro, and he will fire up, weather permitting, at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. This year, our feature is kind of our race car deal. Some of the old nostalgic race cars, that's such a big, big thing now. And we're going to continue our history of having that Cackle. A few years ago, we actually had a tractor there from down your way that came and fired up, and that had 5 blown Chrysler Hemis.
That's incredible. So explain the Cackle quick to us for our listeners so they kind of know what that means and what it's about.
Right. Cackle is where they take old cars, the old type race cars that can no longer run down the track because they're, a vintage type car.
Yep.
And it's a static startup. And we typically do cars that, have run on nitromethane. And for a lot of people, that's the first experience that they've had with nitro.
Perfect.
And we actually will take a car out of the show on Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock, take it outside, and fire it up on the corner, and then it goes back into the show when it's done running.
That's cool. So let's do everybody a favor. Let's go over the dates, times, and location of this year's show and where listeners can find out more information.
You bet. April 2nd and 3rd, coming up at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds Coliseum. Again, that's the Hippodrome. It's the 64th annual GSTA Rod and Custom Spectacular Car Show. And the show hours are Saturday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And we do the awards on Sunday at 5 o'clock, followed by the clearing of the Coliseum. A lot of people like to come on Sunday afternoon and watch the awards, and then they'll just go sit up in the seats as the cars all leave. The clearing of the Coliseum, just to see all those cars that start up and leave and drive out. Information, it will be as we get closer to the show. It's not all on there yet, but you can always get information on our Facebook page and on our website. Again, that's GSTARod-Custom.com. We will have $2 off discount coupons available on the website as we get closer to the show. Adults are $16. Juniors, which are 6 years old to 15, are $5. Five and under are free, and there's plenty of free parking at the fairgrounds.
Perfect.
Brian, you also have a pair of tickets that we're going to give away here on the Horsepower Hour. So what I'm going to have listeners do is just send me an email. So just email Klane, K-L-A-N-E-D, at kowzonline.com. So that's Klane D at cowsonline.com. And we will choose a winner to go to the show for free. And it's going to be an awesome show. And thank you so much for being with us here on the Horsepower Hour. And can't wait to see you at the show.
You bet. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Brian.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Me and Ben are here in the studio waiting to talk to a legend.
Is this Mark Nolan?
Well, yeah, I'll get you one. I'll go get him, okay?
Yeah, call us back when you find one.
I just got done talking to the grandkids, so time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, I think we're going to have a little fun, too. We got some great questions. I think we're going to pick your brain. Our second guest here on the Horsepower Hour, dirt track racing legend, Mark Noble. Mark, it's been 14 years since I interviewed you last on the Dirt Show, so we have a little catching up to do. Racing on the road can be grueling. The amount of miles you put on over the years must be astounding. When did you make the decision to cut back a little bit and start racing your modified closer to home?
Well, I guess when times got kind of tough there for a while, you know, when you don't have as much money to go racing with, you got to cut back. But, you know, I was just fortunate to do it for a long time, I guess. You know, I wanted to keep racing, so we just did more local stuff.
Hey, Mark, your old buddy Benny here. The racing world, great long-time sponsors are key to success, long-term career. Over the years, you've had some great ones. Tell us about them.
Well, it definitely takes that, you know, it takes money. And I just been so fortunate, you know, growing up with my dad racing, you know, and first few years of racing, I raced my dad stuff, you know, this and that. And then when I started doing the IMCA modified stuff, that was first, I guess. Like I say, I was racing my dad's stuff and his sponsors and whatever. And then when I decided to kind of go on my own, I was already racing a few years. So I got to know a few people, and I called them up and told them, you know, guys, I want to do a little modified racing, because I was racing hobby stock and a little bit of late miles with my dad. But when I decided to go to the modified, I just called a few guys I knew locally and started out with basically $500 sponsors. And, you know, $500 is a lot of money.
Right.
But, you know, at that time, I got enough to get my first modified, and it was a Fager car. So I think the first year in modified was a Cass, and the modifieds were just coming in there with soda modifieds. And then Lansing, they came shortly after with a modified, but they were IMCA sanctioned. So the rules were a little bit different, you know, not a whole lot, but a little bit. And but you know, just you know, I was lucky to get a few $500 sponsors and had some good luck, and you know, and with the help of my dad, of course, also. But just kind of went on from there, and one thing led to another, and you know, I kept racing. You know, the big thing is, you know, you go talk to a sponsor. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, you got to really kind of guarantee him that you're going to be racing all year. You know, it happens way too often where you start racing and, you know, it comes July and money starts getting tight. Some guys will kind of quit racing, but, you know, if you get $500 or $5,000, you know, they want to see you racing week after week. And that's kind of where it started out for me is, like I say, helped with my dad and got to know a few people and, you know, and they kind of went with me and I kept going from there.
Mark, before you were even racing, I grew up watching your dad. I'm currently reading a book on the history of Raceway Park and Elko Speedway. Your dad had some great history racing at those two tracks. And then a lot of people don't even realize this. It culminated in a dirt versus asphalt challenge between Elko, Raceway Park, and Owatonna in the early 70s. Do you remember those events?
I sure do. I remember real well. Like as far as the asphalt guys, I remember Bob Gisola came down, and there was, I don't know if Dick Stang, you know, these are guys, a lot of these guys passed away, of course, but oh, I remember that real well. And, you know, my dad in the spring, early spring, Elko would always, and Raceway Park would start before the dirt tracks did. So he would take his car up there because he loved to race, and we'd go up there, and you know, he did okay. You know, it's hard to take a dirt car on the asphalt, and that, but you know, so then when they had that challenge thing, I remember the asphalt cars were tough. You know, my dad ran well. I remember Mert Williams ran well, and Paul Fitzpatrick as far as the dirt guys, but like I said, Bob Gisola and Danny Shabrowski, I think Norm Sechin might have came down, but if I remember right, I think Bob Gisola might have won that little series, but that was a lot of fun, you know, watching my dad race and thinking, wow, this is cool. Those guys up there, they ran good, you know, and they probably raced a lot more than the dirt guys did because they could start earlier and finish later. But, yeah, I remember that real well.
You have a great memory because it was Bob Gisola that won that thing. And I also heard that one of the scheduled races here at Owatonna was called because it was so dusty they couldn't control the dust and nobody could see each other.
Yeah, right. I remember that also. But I think the asphalt guys, they were probably the ones that called it because they, you know, they're not used to getting their cars dirty and doing a little bumping and rubbing, you know, on asphalt. It's, you know, it's good racing, but it's a little different type of racing. So I know they, I can remember that they were pretty upset that it was so darn dirty and dusty, but, you know, my dad and the other guys, they were just, well, that's what we put up with, you know. It's an afternoon race.
So the word on the street is all them asphalt guys call you the dirt ball. Is that true?
Yeah, I did get called the dirt ball, but in a good way, because it was in the 80s. I went up there and I raced at Elko and Raceway Park, you know, weekly, because I, you know, at that time, you know, I was running around here on the dirt, and I thought, God darn, I want to go up on asphalt and race some asphalt and hopefully kind of move on from there. You know, I had big ambitions to go NASCAR, you know, but, you know, it's
right.
Just a young kid just hoping and wishing, but, you know, that year they had a point series between Elko and Raceway, and I think I was third at Elko in points and second maybe at Raceway Park, and it was getting to be towards the end of the year, and all I had to do was run good, and I was leading the overall points, but I wasn't leading any of the track. But I remember Dewey Gustafson, he was a neat old guy, good racer, and up at Raceway Park, it was, I don't know if it was the last race or second last race of the year, I pulled on for the feature, and I broke an axle before the race even started, a broken axle. And, you know, back then we didn't have locked rear ends. You know, my dad, he was a big open rear end guy, and, you know, a lot of guys did have their rear ends locked up. But when the axle broke, you know, it's what they call a one-wheel wonder, and I couldn't even start the feature. And well, then I lost the point lead, and I remember Dewey, after the race, he come over, and you know, and he goes, "Ah, you little dirt ball, you almost beat us." Yeah, a couple times, you know, chunks of dirt would fall off, and boy, that'd really make them upset if there was dirt on the race.
Yeah, us asphalt guys, we don't like that.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Making it work on both ends, aren't you?
Yeah. But, you know, and I can't remember, it was 84, 85 when I raced up there. And, it was a lot of fun, you know. I got to meet a few different drivers, and, you know, it was competition. It didn't matter if it was dirt or asphalt. It was good racing.
So, Mark, we recently acquired a vintage race car. Let's talk vintage a little bit. We've been kicking around a lot of ideas. You have a very cool piece of racing history sitting in your garage. It's a Joe Shearer late model driven by your dad. Talk about a little bit of history of this car.
It's a Bemco, and it's an asphalt car. And around the dash, there's a tag. You know, it's a little serial number, and it's stamped out. You know, it says Bemco Engineering and Nielsen Racing. Fred Nielsen owned the car when it was brand new. And then there's a serial number. It's a 121. So with having that on there, I just got to know the history of it. But Joe Shearer, he drove it when it was brand new, and Fred Nielsen owned it. And I'm not sure how many years Joe drove it. But then they sold it to Bud Stevens in Fountain City, Wisconsin. Bud used to sponsor my dad for a while there, but sold it to Bud. And Phil Prusak drove it on the dirt when Bud owned it. And he raced it a few years and did real well with it. But then my dad bought it from Bud, and he drove it. My dad drove it a little bit, but I probably drove it more because I think he drove it 1 year, and then he got a different car, you know, late model dirt. So I raced it on the hobby stock and a little bit of late model with it. So and I had real good luck with it in the hobby stock. So yeah, it's got a lot of character, you know. Car with Joe Shearer, he's pretty famous racer in the Wisconsin world and, you know, all around. So, you know, I guess it sat out at our salvage yard for many years after we got done racing it. You know, it had the engine, carburetor, everything was sitting out there. You know, he was the type that, you know, he didn't want to get rid of anything, so he put it out to the salvage yard. And I was lucky to drive it probably 3 years. And golly, I just remember it. The thing just handled so well, being an asphalt car. And, you know, the suspensions were pretty simple back then. And, you know, I know the 1 year I raced it as a hobby stock, and we raced at Casson on Sunday nights, and then Lansing would have been Saturday then. And Fridays, we raced around a little bit, some of Cannon River Speedway by Morristown, and then also Fountain City. But, you know, back then they were paying $300 to win the feature in the hobby stocks, and I don't know how many weeks, you know, I'd win all three features, and I was making $900 a week. And back in the late, the late 60s or maybe early 70s, that was a lot of money, you know, because the expenses weren't nothing like they were nowadays. So hopefully I'll get it restored sometime, and because it belongs in a museum, just because the guys that got to race it, you know, Phil Prusak, he's a pretty famous racer from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and my dad raced it, and the big thing is Joe Shearer's car. That's, to me, that's a pretty, pretty neat thing.
The name Mark Noble drew fans. We always said if Mark Noble was racing at Owatonna, there was 2,000 fans in the seats. If not, there's probably about 500. You had a tremendous fan following over the years, and they followed you everywhere.
You know, back then, the days of my big rival was Ron Jones, you know, and I know him and I, we used to get after it pretty hard. But, you know, I worked in Owatonna for a lot of years and raced locally and just knew a lot of people and had a lot of good luck there. But it was, I don't know if it was me so much or Ron Jones or Kelly Shyrock and back then, and even Tommy Meyer was running good, you know. We had a lot of good races. I remember a lot of them. And sometimes, you know, Ron and I, we'd have to get out and discuss the race probably halfway through the race sometimes, or even afterwards. But, you know, it was just a lot of competition. And, you know, the bad as we used to argue, I can, you know, now I haven't seen Ron for a few years, but we're good friends. You know, it's a good good thing. But I was just out there. I just wanted to win another race. So did Ron.
Well, word on the street is he won the whole battle.
Well, that's what I told Ron. We had a lot of good hard races, you know.
Yeah.
And I know Ron, I think we're up in Alexandria. It was later in both of our career, and we were racing. And well, I caught Ron in the feature, and you know, I was inside of him, and he kind of come down, and I guess I didn't give an inch. We got together pretty hard, and he spun, and I didn't. And he come over. He's pretty mad at me. He's yelling, he's screaming. He said, "I owe you one." And I just go, "Hey, Ron, I'll tell you what. I'll let you know when we're even."
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Let's talk about feature wins, Mark. Racing up over 620 feature wins over your almost 50 years of racing career. Is there one win or one race that stands out from all the others?
You know, there's quite a few that I think, you know, I can think of real quick, you know. But I'll tell you one is, you know, at Owatonna, because that was kind of considered a hometown thing for me. And I can't remember what year it was, but they had the old Milwaukee Classic. And up until then, I always ran good there, but I was having a hard time winning the feature. And I won that one. That was, I think it was $3,000 to win, and that was a big deal. And it was, I think it was sponsored or put on by the Hayfield, I don't want to say it's the liquor store there, but I can't remember the name of the bar there, but it was called the Old Milwaukee Classic, and I won that. And that, you know, to win an Owatonna for me was such a big thing. So there's so many family and friends around and fans and stuff, but, you know, that one sticks out real good. And then I won a race in Batesville, Arkansas once, beat a local guy, Wayne Brooks, you know, it's a 10,000 to win race, and I won that. It's pretty hard to win at Batesville, so that one, I can remember that. And then, you know, the IMCA Super Nationals, they'll always stick out real quickly, because when you get 300-400 cars, you know, trying to make a 33-car feature, you know, and to win that, that's pretty special, too.
Absolutely.
I saw you in those very first modifieds, and I can admit it to you now that I thought those cars were junk. I remember sitting in the grandstand here at Owatonna, and these cars pull out, and the engines are smoking, and they look pretty crude, and they were cobbled together. And as a fan, I really was not impressed with the early modifieds. I thought these things are never going to make it, and what a difference from then to now.
Yeah. You know, Keith Kanak, he started the modifieds. You know, he bought the IMCA sanction, and, you know, it used to be a traveling late model series, you know, because, you know, guys like Ole Brew, and he's from Albert Lee, and then Ramo Stott and Ernie Durr, you know, they were the big travelers, and that was all IMCA stuff, and they'd go around from fairgrounds to fairgrounds, basically, and race, you know, all around the country. Well, when that kind of, it didn't fold, but they just kind of quit doing it, and years later, Keith Kanak bought the IMCA name, and he come up with the modified concept. You know, it was supposed to be a cheap class, and it took off. You know, they had Vega and Pinto bodies, you know, steel bodies, and then, you know, one thing leads to another, you know, and that's what you're talking about, Glenn, that back in that era, yeah, you would run more stock bodies, and they were, you know, some of them were aluminum, but they're pretty crude, you know, and just because the class was so economical, it did catch on. You know, guys, you know, they had the claim rules and stuff, but as time went on, you know, you really can't stop it. You know, when you get more and more drivers in it, then they started paying more money. But yeah, the modifieds of today, my first modified, to see a picture of that, the last one, yeah, they're not even close to the same, but... But it's still modified racing, and when you get a lot of cars, you're going to have competitive racing. And that's what the modifieds did, you know. It allowed a lot of guys to afford to race, you know. Claim rule on the engine in the early years, it's, you know, $300 claim. You either sold it or you didn't. Like it or not, that kept the cost of racing down. But, you know, now, you know, you have different sanctions. You still have the IMCA, you know, the USMTS and WSOTA. It's gotten, you know, I don't want to say out of control, but it kind of has, because rather than running a $300 engine, you're running a $20,000 to $30,000 engine. But it's just changing times. You can't really stop it. You know, the rules allow it, and races will spend whatever it takes to run up front, no matter what.
No, I agree. You ended the season winning the Modified Track Championship at Fairmont Raceway and running a vintage car. Will fans get to see Mark Noble from time to time in a vintage class at tracks around the area?
Yeah, you know, I've told my wife many times for probably 10 years, I go, this is my last year. I'm going to be done, you know. And I was just so fortunate to keep getting sponsors and keep doing it. But this is last year, you know. I'm 65, and I've raced for 48 years, and it just kind of feels right. But, yeah, and I got asked by old Keith Simmons to run his old late model, you know, in a vintage. First, I had to check with the racetrack because it's four retired racers, you know, and old racers. I guess I'm an old guy, but the track said, yeah, you can run it. So I did, and it's a pretty neat car, you know. We had a lot of fun. I ended up winning the feature. But, yeah, in the future, you know, I know Keith wants to do it again a little more, but I really don't have a plan. You know, I can't just walk away from racing, you know, cold stone, you know, just walk away. But I might not. I really don't know. For here and now, we're just going to kind of get caught up with things at home and spend some time with the family and grandkids, big thing. But I'll still go to races. And I imagine if Keith calls me and wants to go race here or there, I might do it. I can't say yes for sure, but it's a neat old class. You know, they find these old race cars and kind of restore them and get them back running. And, you know, a lot of guys, they've never raced before. They got this old race car. They love racing, so they get it running and go out there, you know. So if I do it, I don't know if I belong in the class yet or not. I've raced a long time, but I get called old man a lot, but, you know, it doesn't bother me. It's just a number. Your age is just a number. It's how your health is and how you're doing, I guess.
Mark, from all of the fans that have cheered for and followed your racing career over the years, thank you. Thank you for your time, your effort in the shop to get to the track, and for all of the history of yours and your father's that you have preserved and continue to preserve for future fans.
Thanks, I appreciate it. But, you know, it takes so many people. Everybody knows that, you know, and I grew up watching my dad, and that's all I ever wanted to do, and I was so fortunate enough to do it. But you got to have, you know, one thing, you got to have a wife that'll put up with all your crap so you can go racing, because, you know, I was just lucky to do it a lot. And, you know, it takes guys working on the car other than me and sponsors, and it takes so many people, and you gotta have a lot of good people around you.
Well, hey, Mark, thanks for all the great years, too. You're definitely a hero of mine growing up and watching your race, and definitely shared your plenty of advice with me, good advice, and we appreciate it, and thanks for being on the show.
All right, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Your home is your sanctuary. The next time you need appliance service, invite someone in that will treat it that way. Sorensen's Appliance Service is locally owned with 15 years of experience. Sorensen's Appliance Service also has fully certified technicians who will leave your home as clean as they found it. If you want fast, efficient, and cleanly service, contact Sorensen's Appliance Service today, 256-7766. That's 256-7766.
Our final guest in the Horsepower Hour is super late model driver Dan Fredrickson. Dan, a four-time Oktoberfest champion in October of 2021, you swept the twin 20 lappers again. What is it with you and LaCrosse Speedway and coming away with big wins there?
The track just suits me. I would say that a lot of my best races have been on flatter racetracks, and LaCrosse is pretty flat, low banking, and it's got a lot of room to move. You know, the Oktoberfest wins are great. Those twin 20 lappers that I won this year, we came from the back in those, and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, like that Trickle 99 race that they have on the Friday of Oktoberfest, that's super exciting. A lot of three-wide action, and just a massive amount of hustle to get to the front. They keep having big inverts in that race. So I don't know. I mean, the races are fun there. The track is great. I just, you know, I grew up watching some of my heroes there when I was a kid, and it's just been a good time. I don't know. It's just the track fits me well.
Dan, we lost the Minnesota State Fairgrounds track and Raceway Park. Those were major blows to our area asphalt racers. Even though Elko Speedway is our last asphalt oval in the state of Minnesota, is the asphalt racing community still growing and thriving?
I was just thinking about something the other night, and I'll share it with you guys a little bit. You talk about, like, the top of asphalt racing is NASCAR. And have you noticed how many sponsors are from Minnesota in the main NASCAR, like, say, in the Cup Series? WeatherTech, 3M, Honeywell. There's a whole bunch of them. I listed them off a year or two ago, and it was, like, literally over a third of the Cup field was sponsored by a Minnesota company. So, with that being said, being an asphalt racer at heart from Minnesota, it's very disheartening. Elko is an awesome racetrack. You know, I grew up there. But, you know, losing the state fair was just an absolute dagger to the state's racing, recognition, let's say. You know, we go to big races all around the country now, and I see a lot of the old racers, they come in and see how things are going and catch up. And every single time one of them sees me, they bring up the state fair race that was always on Labor Day. So I think obviously dirt racing is doing really well in Minnesota and Elko does well, but yeah, losing those racetracks was a kicker.
And the saddest thing to me, Dan, is if you take the Sky Ride at the Minnesota State Fair, and you go over the racetrack, and all that's missing is turn two. And you think to yourself, why? Why did you just cut the one corner off to make sure there could never be racing there again and then just leave it sit there? It's like taunting somebody.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where the racetrack sits exactly today, but I know that turn two was ripped out right away, literally a couple of days after the last race, which I was lucky enough to be in that race. Finished well. We run third, and another probably couple laps we would have had a shot at the win there. But I think they ripped. I don't know when the last time you saw that is, but I believe a lot of it is tore out now. We were actually camping there for a horse show with my daughter, and I heard a bunch of noise and walked out there, and they were tearing up a whole bunch of it a couple of years ago. So I think every couple of years it gets worse. I know what you're talking about, and I remember looking at it going, well, they could still come back and make this kind of a tricky, you know, tri-oval 3/8 or something like that, but it just isn't going to happen, it doesn't look like.
Well, one reason for me, once they took out Heritage Square and what was left of Speedy's Garage back there and the few racing memorabilia pieces that they had left, I've never been back, so it's been a while.
Yeah, there's a massive amount of angry people. You know, the thing is, the kind of people that are mad at the state fair just don't go there. You know, we just don't make enough noise. They probably thought that we could be noisy because, you know, them canceling that race and tearing up the racetrack was an absolute covered-up deal. Nobody knew that was going to happen until it was too late.
You know, coming from dirt and growing up around dirt, Dan, and then stepping into the asphalt world, I absolutely wish we could green a few more tracks in the local area. So I hope Elko stays around and doesn't go anywhere for a while.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, there's some tracks that have went by the wayside, obviously. The track right in Owatonna, I don't know when the last time they've raced there, but I remember going there years back, and I was so awed by how good Mark Noble was there, which is cool that I'm on the same show as him tonight. But, you know, a lot of the complaints about that was just the dust with the new businesses moving in. And I thought, what a great opportunity to build an asphalt track right there. Of course, I don't know who to talk to, and I don't know how it would ever happen. But, I mean, you know, there's enough asphalt fans and racers to have two tracks in Minnesota. I'm not sure if you guys are super familiar, but, you know, Sauk Center and Fergus Falls, those were both asphalt tracks for quite some time. And of all the tracks I've raced on, that Fergus Falls was probably the funnest racetrack I ever ran. And it's still a successful dirt track today. Of course, Sauk Center is completely mowed over, but those were good tracks too. So we went from five asphalt tracks, say in 2000, 2001, 2000. In 2002, we had five good asphalt tracks in Minnesota, and now we have one, you know.
So. That's hard to believe, yeah.
But, hey, you know what? Our neighbors in Wisconsin, they're packed with good tracks.
Absolutely.
So,
hey, let's talk about a little bit of ARCA. Dan, you're also a two-time ARCA Midwest Touring Series champion. What is your favorite stop on that series schedule, and why do you like that particular track so much?
Well, I'll tell you, obviously, the Thunderstruck race at Elko used to be an ARCA Midwest Tour race, and that was a memorial race for a friend of mine that had passed away. So we put more effort into that race than we did all the other races combined for the season. That's no more. Obviously, Oktoberfest we love, but I would say, like, right now, Appleton, Wisconsin, or Kokana area, Wisconsin International Raceway, I've had that race in the bag so many times, and something happens. I just had the worst luck there. I run really good there always, and I've never won that race. Very fun racetrack, so I would say right now, that's probably the one that I would look forward to the most.
Maybe you got to stop by the casino that used to sponsor Pistol Pete Parker and get some luck.
Yeah, I think when we went there for the ASA tour in 2002, we stayed, all the race teams stayed at that local casino there. Is it a Ho-Chunk casino?
Yes, I think so.
Yep.
Oneida, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, sponsors make the world go round, and you have some great ones on board. Grain Handler products made right here in Minnesota, and also Weir's Machine and the knowledge of Chad Weir that comes behind each one of the products he built.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've got Wes Herman at Herman's Landscape Supply in Jordan, and he's been really good to me. In fact, I was kind of laughing. I was just at my dad's house the other day, and he has an old hood hanging up, and it's got Herman's Landscape Supply on the hood. And I'd kind of forgotten about that. I mean, I've been with them for so long. I kind of forgot about, like, how long it's been even, you know, because the hood that he had was probably 15 years old, you know. And so to get a partner like that in racing, it just doesn't happen very often, you know. Usually, you know, a 3 to 4 year deal is what you see out of sponsors nowadays. And to have a partner with him in this deal has been pretty good for me.
So let's talk a bit about the kids, Dan. At Little Elko Speedway there, when Bristol was racing, you guys were there. Nothing like family at the Little Elko Speedway.
Oh, yeah. The quarter midget track, you know, so all five of my kids now have raced there one time or another. Just the atmosphere, you know. I don't know if it's for the kids or for the parents, to be honest. I feel like we're having every bit as much fun as they are, which is great. You know, the Bainey family, they quit out on us, but they always had that awesome taco bar in the front of their trailer, which I miss dearly.
We'll be back now.
Good. But we enjoy it. Ty is my youngest son, who's 12, and so he's in it now, and my 7-year-old daughter Harper's in it, and they seem to really love it. Kind of exciting. Ty's actually preparing a late model full-size car for himself right now as we speak. So he's getting ready to go to the powder coater. We'll run down to Extreme Powder Coating in Blooming Prairie there and get the painted up in the next couple weeks and start putting that together. So
right on.
He's going to start running a big car now, and I don't know how it's going to work. I try to tell him that he should just stop worrying about it and play more baseball, but it doesn't seem to be sticking.
Where is he going to run that at?
Well, so far, the only two tracks that we've got to okay us to run is a quarter-mile late models at Kokona, which is just basically the pit road almost.
Yep.
They have a really good show. They get like 20 cars, but that's about a five-hour drive.
Sure.
And then just today, we got a call from State Park Speedway, which is only about 2.5 hours away, and they said he can race there. So
perfect.
I think we'll probably prepare the car to race at Wausau this year. Like I said, he's only 12, so we'll take it easy with him. We ran probably 150 laps with him last fall, and he was really good and right up to speed and awesome car control. So we'll just keep working on that, starting him in the back and work on, you know, passing a couple here and there until he gets a good feel for it. I don't want him to jump in like some of these richer kids that are jumping in nowadays and ruffling feathers. And I just don't want people to be hating him for taking it too fast, you know?
Absolutely.
And he's doing all the work himself too. You know, we got an old car from down in Florida. I don't know if you guys remember Johanna Long. She was a NASCAR nationwide racer and she won the Snowball Derby. Basically, her family gave us an amazing deal on one of her old cars, and we have it stripped down to basically nothing now, and we're going to refurbish it and do all the geometry the way I do it and work on it. It should be fun.
That's cool.
Your cars always look incredible, and that is a reflection of what you do for a living. Talk about your business and what you can do for the listeners out there.
Well, we got Dan Fredrickson Signs and Graphics. Started, oh, I don't know, almost 20 years ago by accident. We've just been kind of trying to keep our customers happy and not a lot of advertising, and it's grown into a pretty good little business. We do a lot of fleet vehicles, you know, plumbing companies, electrical companies, a lot of van wraps, bus wraps, trailer wraps. We do a lot of decals for machines, race cars, of course. And it's pretty good. We've kind of got our knack, and our kind of a customer base is that medium to small, you know, company around here that wants to stand out and have the best looking vans they can get. And we've been really happy, to be honest, with just taking care of our customers, and they keep coming back.
Yeah, you guys do nice work. See some stuff you guys do. It looks good.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's really Billy, my designer, is really the brains behind the whole thing. It's my name's on the door, but really I wouldn't be nearly as successful without Billy. And he designs all the stuff. He does a great job, and he's been a huge part of it.
Hey Dan, let's talk about the off season. In today's world, there's almost no such thing as an off season. How do you fill your time in the winter? I'm sure the kids keep you busy. And you do some snowmobiling, maybe?
I wish I could do some snowmobiling, but, you know, I can't help but to have the best. And the best snowmobile now is an awful lot of money. So
you got that right,
buddy. I just skip it all together. I think I tell everybody there's basically three seasons to racing. There's the season that we all know, you know, in the summer. And then there's snowball derby season, which takes at least a month of preparation to go to that, and then you have to have some recuperation time. And then there's Speed Week season, which is coming up here, which we probably won't partake in this year. But, you know, there's some great races that happen down south in the winter, and I want to hit them all really badly, but we're just too busy up here, and it's too hard with the kids in school and stuff. But I think we're going to build a new car for myself this year, which we have, I would say, 30% completed at this point. And I'm kind of working on my schedule stuff. Ty's races at Wausau will be on Thursdays. And, of course, Harper wants to race her quarter midget on Sundays. So I got to go through and find some good races. You know, the ARCA Midwest Tour is awesome. That's a traveling series in Wisconsin primarily. The Wisconsin Dells Raceway Park has been absolutely revitalized into one of the key short track races in Wisconsin. I mean, they have five five race series that pays really good. And those have become probably some of the toughest races in Wisconsin. I want to hit the Slinger Nationals. I've never had a good finish there. I've ran it twice. It's a completely different monster there, and I want to get better. I want to go to Slinger. I want to go to Slinger a time or two before the Slinger Nationals. So I don't know. Have you guys been to Slinger? Or?
You know what? I haven't, and Conrad Jorgensen offered me to go take that modified, but I didn't take him up on it, and I wish I would have, but that looks like a mean speedway or a racetrack.
Yeah, so it's a quarter mile, and it's very, very banked, and literally things happen so fast. You get to lap 50, and you don't even know if you're on the front straightaway or the back straightaway anymore. It's just, it's absolutely like being stuck in the wash machine. And
yeah,
it's very fun. It's very challenging. The people that race there all the time have huge advantage because they perfect themselves there. They get very good at it, and it's a separate deal. And I want to get in on that and get that track figured out a little better. I've had speed there. I've just never raced good there. And that's a goal of mine for the summer. And
yeah, watching
probably
it
hit some other ones.
Watching it on TV, it looks intense. It looks real intense.
Oh, yeah. If you want to see an amazing short track race, just Google Matt Kenseth versus Eric Jones Slinger and watch the last five laps of that. It's just unbelievable.
We'll check it out.
NASCAR could have that. They'd have all their fans back.
Well, I think maybe they're trying to gear it towards that a little bit. I guess we'll find out. So,
yeah.
Hey, Dan, thanks for so much for being with us here on the Horsepower Hour. We appreciate it, and you enjoy your night.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate having you.